All right, so welcome to episode 5 of Cumberland County Historical Society's History TBD. And I have with me today our curator, Rachel Zook, and the assistant curator, Peggy Huffman. We're going to be talking about the new exhibit here at the Historical Society. So welcome, both of you.
Thanks.
So I thought I'd start with one of you telling us a little bit about the new exhibit. What's the title? What's it about? What are people going to see?
Okay, well, the title of the exhibit is... I just forgot. Can we start over? He closed the door on us!
Blair can cut it out. It's okay.
Oh, good. Here. I'm going to open it for a minute. War that changed the world.
Okay, so do I just start over with
sentence? Blair can cut this portion out. What is the title?
Okay, our new exhibit on World War I is called The War That Changed the World, Lasting Effects of World War I on Cumberland County. And, of course, we're doing this because it's the 100th anniversary of the ending of World War I, so sort of the peace and victory following that. And what we wanted to focus on was... the way it changed the world. We have a lot of little markers in the exhibit that showcase different innovations, different inventions, different changes in society, things that we're so familiar with today, like even income tax. That's timely. But before this era, they really didn't have like a federal national income tax, and now everyone says, oh, it's April, time to pay the IRS. But
daylight savings time.
Daylight savings,
We can blame World War I on all of these things.
yeah, exactly. Prosthetics start really develop at that point because they've got hard hats, you know, hard helmets. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, that's good. I was done.
Yeah, so we're looking at stories in the downstairs gallery that have to do with the home front and what happens here. And then upstairs, that gallery is about the soldier experience.
So they came home, or the experience at the war?
During the war. We hit a little tiny bit on coming home, but not a lot. There's a little bit about the influenza downstairs, that sort of thing. But mostly it's the experience, during the war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you have a favorite item or object in the exhibit that you want to highlight to people when they come?
Yes. There's lots of really interesting stories in the exhibit, and it's great fun, and we really do try to focus on people. There's one story in particular that I find incredibly touching, and it's a story about two brothers, John and Frank Westfall. Frank is actually 4 years older than John. John's 22, and Frank's, 26 then. And they are both actually from Grantham. They grew up on the corner of Lisbon and Grantham Road, and their parents actually roomed people from the Messiah College, some of the students there. And actually, I found out about this through some friends of mine. This is one of their relatives, and she put me in touch with Dottie and Joanne, and they kind of told me about this story. The two brothers are in the same division, and they're out fighting in France at Fismes, and I'm sure I'm not pronouncing that right, but the younger brother, John, is actually hit by a shell. And he dies. And Frank, who was actually gassed at the time because he didn't put his helmet or his gas mask on, when that happened, he saw his brother and ran over to help him. And so he suffered some gassing. So we have this letter. Of course, we got photos and different things like that, but we have the letter that Frank actually wrote to his mother, Lily Bache Westfall, trying to console her at the loss of her son, John. And it's scanned, and it's there for anybody to pick up and read. I thought it would be really nice to share that with everyone today. It starts, "Dear Mother, it has been quite a while since I have written to you, but you mustn't think anything of it when you don't hear from me for a week or two. For sometimes I am not in a position to write just as often as I would like to. I know how anxious you are to get mail from over here, and I always try to write at least once a week, but sometimes it just isn't possible to do so. Mother, I just don't know how to write this letter. I have been trying for 2 days to think what I want to write, but have not come to any conclusion, so we'll just have to make the best of it. That is, write as it comes to me at random. Now, Mother dear, I suppose you have by this time gotten a telegram of sympathy from the War Department. If not, I hope this letter will not bear a great surprise to you, as I have written and informed Aunt Ella and also Helen, with the hopes that they would break the news to you in such a way as not to give you any unnecessary shock. Now, Mother, anything that happens over here in the line of duty can't be anything but an honor to the folks at home, so don't worry or grieve over the sad news that I have to tell you. It is quite lonely over here just now for me. That is, that it has been lonely since the 6th or 7th of August, since John was taken away. You know, we can't all come back, Mother. There is some of us must stay over there. John and I had been lucky for quite a long time, and I dare say that we often wondered just how we came out of some of the hot places. But even luck can't last all the time, and John was the first to run to the end of his luck. He was always up and ready to do his bit at all times, under any condition, and although he was not wearing a badge for bravery, he was as brave as anyone that ever wore a DSC. We went into position on the 6th or 7th, I can't remember just which it was, but we done good work while we lasted. John had shot up several of the Huns' positions and done them an awful lot of damage before they got range on us. The second shell that came over hit near his gun and exploded. John was hit, and I went to his aid, but there was nothing to be done for him. He did not suffer, but passed away very peacefully. I got quite a bit of gas while trying to aid John, and next day got more gas, and now in a base hospital, but am not in a serious case and expect to be out in a few days. We buried John with full field honors. He was given extraordinary fine burial, and the grave is marked with a wooden cross about 2.5 feet tall. Now, Mother, don't grieve over John, and don't worry about me. I know it will be hard for you, but there's others who have to hear of the same thing in other families, and one can't do any more to aid his country than to die fighting. It is the only honorable death for any man of military age to die, and the best of it all is that John was prepared to meet his God. That is one thing that the YMCA is doing. It is pulling lots of young men on better footing. Now, Mother, don't grieve, and above all, don't worry about me, for I will be far from danger for a long time to come. I will soon be out of the hospital, but it will be quite a while before I go back to the line, and maybe by that time the war will be over. Must close as my pen is broken and don't write good at all. Hoping this finds you all in the best of health, I remain your loving son, Frank. I feel like that is just a wonderful example of how people approached the whole idea of patriotism, mm-hmm. of families dealing with losing their children, of sending them off into that kind of danger. Frank really did suffer for the rest of his life. He died at 53. He suffered from the gas injury, and so he always had a really difficult time breathing. He worked with a mission, Union City Mission, in Kansas City, Missouri, for quite a few years, and then finally had to move to California. He and his wife, they never had children. He had to move to California because he needed dry air. Humidity was not good for his lungs. So, and even with that, and lots of trips in and out of the hospital, and lung attacks and things, he wasn't able to live longer than 53 years old. Yeah.
Such a beautiful but sad letter. Is there, do we have other examples like that, that in the collection, or is this a rarity?
Yeah, that, this particular letter is a rarity. I mean, we don't, as far as I know, we don't have any other examples of anybody trying to console their parent like that. But we have a gorgeous collection of soldier letters. And we've got, we have a collection for John E. Myers, who was a resident in Camp Hill. He was married for 1 year. And had a child, and before his second year anniversary, the day after, let's see, I can't remember exactly, I think by the time he was married 2 years and had one child, he was off fighting. And he and his wife Eunice keep up a wonderful correspondence between them, and also between he and his father, because he was a lawyer and he had a business that he was trying to touch base with constantly. And he, you know, Eunice wrote back to him and talked about their little child Tom growing up. So we have that collection. We have Robert Lau,
Harold.
Harold Lau. Sorry, Robert Lau is somebody from church, which I do wonder if he isn't related to him. But yeah. So Harold Lau is absolutely dear and writes to his mother throughout the entire time. And I do believe that his mom lost her husband, Harold's father, about 5 or 6 years before he left. So she's, you get the feeling that, you know, he was her comfort. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, he's continuing that as much as he can while he's away. And he doesn't write about anything, you know, amazing, but it's just sweet because you can tell that he was used to holding conversation every day with his mom.
Yeah, kind of like that dinner table type of conversation, but in letters.
Yes, exactly. I mean, he talks about, he you know, says each and every little thing that's in his comfort bag. He spells it all out. He, you know, he just describes everything, which is also great if you want to know, like, what was in a comfort bag, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and just the things that were going on, the trip over. Wasn't he the one that was involved in the ship? There was one that was involved in a ship accident.
Oh, I think that was another man, yeah, okay. Who talked about how he was rolling back and forth on the deck. I mean, some of them have a good sense of humor. When you were saying, I thought of, oh, there's Ralph Watts, too. He writes his letters home, and he's always got something funny to say about what's going on over there, about how, oh, it's the Army, you know, you shut up and you listen, and, you know, he's not very good at that, and things like that. he does a good job. I enjoyed his letters, which we also, you know, they were given to the museum, the library collection here also.
Yeah, and that reminds me, John Myers felt like that the Stars and Stripes was a bunch of pap. That's what he called it. This is a bunch of pap. And he, you know, he would really gripe and complain about it. He's an older man. He's, you know, had lots of time to think and be real clear about how he feels about things. And so he expresses himself very well.
He doesn't hold back.
No, it's pretty dear. So, yeah, and that's another thing that's really cool about this exhibit is we've used a lot of newspaper articles, and it's so much fun to read the newspaper and hear the way people use language then, and that goes for the letters as well. Mm-hmm. And so you hear all of this language, and we threw up a lot of our titles come from that, like "Don't be a slacker." Mm-hmm. You know, and slackers were people, well, you could be a slacker about anything, right? I mean,
if you weren't doing your duty, you were a slacker.
Yeah, and the duty would be, you know, everything from not eating wheat on Wednesdays to, you know, not giving enough to Liberty Bonds. Mm-hmm. And a lot of peer pressure.
Yeah,
very much.
During this time, yeah. I mean, they posted your name up in the window if you gave. Which means if you didn't have a posting in your window, everybody that walked by your house knew. Yeah. So it's a really fun exhibit, even just for getting a feel for that period. You know, the language, the way that people fought. Yeah.
Yeah, one of my favorite ones is the one we have down where we're talking about the Home Defense Police, and they just publish it right in the paper. They say, "Obey the law and keep your mouth shut." And it's like, I don't know, can you just imagine hearing that from the government now? Yeah. It just is crazy.
Yeah, and people's names were published in the paper if they were fined, you know, for sneaking, you know, too much sugar or mm-hmm. whatever. So it's a fun exhibit. It really is. Yeah.
So when does the exhibit open if people want to visit?
To the public on Friday at 10 o'clock, 10 mm-hmm. a.m. And then we're open through the end of October, mm-hmm. right?
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can always check that on our website and, you know, see what we're doing.
Okay, well, thank you so much for sitting down with me. Yeah. And I'll let you get back to work. You have a week to get everything finished, so I can imagine you're very busy right now.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
This is fun.